Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who have come to realize, or at least open to the realization, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they all are counterproductive. I'm Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is toll-free 877-300-7645. Two bomb attacks occurred, both suicide bombers, in the Nigerian city of Jos. They left 44 people dead. Imagine. Why? What's the purpose of that? What is to be gained by that? Why would one sacrifice their life doing that? The target was a restaurant and a mosque. Yes, but do not think that this was Christians acting like Muslims and trying to lash back at the Muslims, you know, fighting fire with fire, as they say, or as Americans justify going off to war following Pearl Harbor. Well, we just can't do nothing, you know. We've got to make them accountable. We've got to, I don't know, whatever it is that we do. Just pathetic. But nonetheless, this was Muslims killing Muslims. It's so amazing that Islam is such an impoverished religion that the primary recruitment jargon to get Muslims to become jihadists and then go off and kill for Allah is to blame the deaths of Muslim women and children on the West. And yet it just continues. It has always been, and it will always be, that Muslims kill vastly, vastly more Muslims than do anyone else. And they do so in the most uncivilized, most grotesque way. Here? No, these aren't Muslims going off to war. These aren't Muslims showing courage, if you want to speak of war as courage. I won't, but there are those who are patriotically blinded who view it as courage. And fighting someone who's armed. Now, this is kind of like the hunter that goes off to kill the deer with a high-powered rifle and on a scope. The victim has no chance. There's no courage, not even much skill required by the victimizer. And in this case, all of the victims were unarmed, and in this case, the vast preponderance of the victims were fellow Muslims. No one has claimed responsibility, but the group Boko Haram has attacked Jos before, even though it is not in the northeast of Nigeria where these Islamists normally operate. The blasts were the latest in a series of deadly attacks in recent days, which have seen more than 200 people murdered, and many times that mutilated. Why? Because, well, it's Ramadan. These attacks came shortly after the Ramadan fast was broken. By the way, how is it a fast if you eat every day? Both sides were were full of people. Of the 44 dead here on this most recent attack, 23 were killed at the restaurant, 21 at the mosque. There were also 47 people being treated for serious injuries. These casualty figures, and of course the death toll, will rise. The blast in the restaurant was caused by a bomb that had been planted, whereas the mosque was attacked by a suicide bomber, something exclusive to Islam. The explosion was preceded by gunfire. Why not? We'll combine planted bombs, suicide bombers, and why not gun down unarmed people? It's so Islamic of us. Eyewitnesses said that when they started shooting, people started running helter-skelter for their lives. Unfortunately, those that stood up were shot. It's kind of like speaking up against religion today or against patriotism or politics. Those who stand up are shot. Our correspondent says that many believe that the mosque imam, yes, who was preaching at the time, was the primary target. Sheikh Mohammed Sani Yahya Zingar, who survived the attack, is known for preaching against Boko Haram and has written a book which criticizes the group called Boko Halal. Western education, actually books, are permitted. Boko Haram means books are forbidden. It's interesting in Arabic, which is really Hebrew, that halal is the word for acceptable, and haram is the word for bad. Because in Hebrew, the name halal is Satan's first name. He was survived a previous assassination against him at his home, and is seen as one of the most influential critics in Nigeria. You notice that he didn't write a book that said terrorism is haram. He didn't write a book that said jihadi is haram. No, he just wrote a book that says that there is nothing in the Quran that says that Muslims can't be educated. Now, the fact is that an educated Muslim ceases to be a Muslim. If a person has one glimmer, just one tiny shred of interest in knowing the truth, if their mind is the slightest bit open, if they are anything but totally immune to reason, any kind of an education about Islam provided by a non-Muslim will cause the Muslim to cease to be a Muslim. So the reason that Muslims don't like Western education is because, well, the Quran even admits it. Those who question the Quran lose their faith because the Quran is the dumbest book ever written. Allah is the most perverted and pathetic wannabe God ever conceived, and Muhammad was the most perverted and ruthless and disgusting human who ever lived. It is not unusual, of course, for heightened risks of jihadi attacks during the holy Muslim month of Ramadan. Why don't they just call it the holy pagan and therefore Muslim month of Ramadan, because that's what it is. Boko Haram is trying to deepen its ties with the jihadis fighting in Iraq and Syria, and has identified itself with the Islamic State. Many of the recent attacks have been by suicide bombers. Most of them, equal opportunity to die in Islam. That's the only equal opportunity in Islam. Most have been by young women. Where the bombs are being made, where the bombers are being brainwashed, oh, well, you know, this is as it's unclear. Well, let's make this clear. They're being brainwashed in the mosque. They're being brainwashed by the Quran. Where their bombs are being made is irrelevant. Yes, Scott?
You said that, you know, they shouldn't name it the pagan, but correct me if I'm wrong here. They already covered that when they said holy. Right?
Yeah, unfortunately, most people don't know that holy is also a pagan term. But it nonetheless is. Once again, the range of targets is alarming. The latest bloody Sunday, a church and a mosque were bombed within hours of each other. Oh, that's so nice. Islam is becoming tolerant and accepting. Yes, they will kill Christians and Muslims with impunity. Two of three British teenage girls who left Britain in February have now joined the Islamic State and are married. Yes, you know, nothing tells me that speaks of love and marriage more than going off and preparing to satiate the carnal desires of a suicide bomber jihadist and then being conditioned to be a suicide bomber yourself. What a life worth living. The Guardian newspaper cites family members reporting that the pair have married men approved for them by the Islamic State. You see, the Islamic State has conducted contests on the Quran. And if you win one of the contests, which is a memorization contest, then you receive a slave girl. Not, you know, to clean your flat. No, to have sex with. And, you know, that's just because they just don't have enough of these children Muslims to go around. But that's what they would have. That's what their fate is. One of the girls had called her family to tell them she was married. The other girl used married. Just in Islam, it's all about conquest. She's not married. No, she's owned. She's controlled. She's being raped, probably regularly. The three girls caused consternation when they left the UK, apparently without warning, and went to Syria, packing a packing list they left behind looked like one that any teenage girl might have before going up and going on vacation. Oh, yes, makeup, bras, underwear, boots. An epilator. We want to be neat now. We're on the list. The girls were 15, 16, and 15 years old. Oh, yes, pedophilia is alive and well in Islam because Muhammad was a pedophile. They are pictured having crossed the border of Turkey into Syria within days of their departure. And now we have the families wondering, oh, where did we go wrong? Well, you were Muslims. That's where you went wrong. The day they left for Turkey, at least one of the girls contacted a young woman, Aksa Mahmoud, who had left home in Scotland to travel to Syria in 2003, and who was accused of trying to recruit others via social media. Yes, come and die here after being owned and raped here. She has posted tips for girls and young women wanting to travel to Syria to marry jihadis. Her blog also has links to advice posted by another jihad supporter, which recommends that those traveling to Syria seek to pack the essentials, but not too much, since they may need to move on short notice while remaining inconspicuous. Ah, yes, the wonderful religion that is Islam. When we return, we're going to turn to a story that is Dateline Kabul, Afghanistan, and how Muslim girls are treated in that Islamic country. You'll want to stay tuned for that. Wonders and excitement, the romance of it all that awaits the young brides, and I do mean young, since they were 15 years old, that have ventured off to be jihadi wives in Syria. And speaking of the imam that spoke of Western education is good, Dateline, Afghanistan, Kabul. Attackers on a motorbike threw acid in the facers of three teenage girls on their way to school in Afghanistan's Herat province. The girls aged 16 to 18 were students at one of the biggest girls' schools in Herat City, the provincial capital. The three girls were admitted to Noor Hospital in Herat City before their parents took them elsewhere. The hospital head said the two girls were in critical condition after the acid was thrown in their faces. The girls said that the assailant screamed at them, "This is the punishment for going to the school." The girls were then held down, and the men poured the remaining acid all over them. I spoke last week and the week before about hate, and that while the world says that the problem is hate, I think the problem is that we don't hate enough. It's not that there's too much hate, there's too little of it. Because if you hear a story like these girls running off to be child brides to Muslims, if you hear about Muslims holding contests where the prize is a sex slave, you hear about Muslims walking into a restaurant and into a mosque with guns and bombs and killing and mutilating scores of of innocent people. You hear the story of Boko Haram in Nigeria kidnapping thousands upon thousands of little girls and turning them into sex slaves. You hear about the crucifixions and the decapitations that are taking place every day in Syria as a result of Islam. If you don't hate the religion for inspiring such ruthless, reprehensible, and repulsive acts, then you're incapable of love. You're incapable of being moral. You're incapable of being just. Somebody who is capable of all of those things is Glenn, who has called in on marriage and terrorism. Oh, they really go together, don't they? Hi, Glenn.
Yes, apparently so. Yes, hi.
Hi.
These girls that got married, did they use eHalalmoney or bombchemistry.com?
No, it was eHalalmoney.
Yeah, eHalalmoney.
Yes, yeah, a version of eHarmony, but for Islam.
Right.
E-Islam Harmony. Yeah, well.
Which battalion did they marry?
All of the battalion, yes. Well, you know, they were married off to the Islamic State as opposed to a jihadist. And, you know, marriage has a very different definition these days. You know, it was interesting how the U.S. Supreme Court, speaking of marriage, that Roberts, who 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer, I spent an hour exposing his past, and I told anyone who would listen that Roberts is going to become the next Earl Warren. A man that was nominated by a allegedly conservative Republican, becoming the catalyst for the most aggressive liberalization in the country. You know, his majority decision on gays being married was based on the Dignity Clause. You're a constitutionalist, Glenn. Can you quote the Dignity Clause of the U.S. Constitution for me?
No, I cannot. I'm sorry.
You know why you can't?
Because it doesn't exist.
There you go. There is no such thing. So he just made up a clause.
Wow. So he's a dragon in wolf's clothing.
He would be. Yeah, he would be. Yeah, that's the story.
The Muslims can instruct him on marriage because they got the whole goat thing going on.
Oh, they do. You know, why not? I figure that if a person's dignity is at stake, that then why not authorize bestiality? Shouldn't we authorize?
Isn't dignity usually associated with death? Don't they do death with dignity a lot these days?
Why not legalize pedophilia? Why not legalize rape? If rape makes the rapist feel better, shouldn't we support their dignity? Or what are we doing suggesting that a government or a court can create dignity? And I had a moment, so I thought I'd look up dignity. And the definition, the first definition of dignity, is the biggest issue I have with the homosexual marriage debate, which is now over, having been usurped by 5 men and women. The first definition is the quality or state of being worthy, honored, or esteemed. And that's the whole issue with political correctness and the homosexual, bigender, bisexual, homosexual, transgender, all of those kinds of presentations. They present homosexuality not as being acceptable, not as being normal, but as dignified, as honorable, as that which should be esteemed. And here's the Supreme Court using the word dignity, I think it was 19 times in the majority opinion. 19 times. Speaking of homosexual marriage as honorable, as esteemed, as worthy of veneration. That's stunning.
Yes, and but there's a hypocrisy creeping in with that whole thing now, because while it certainly would not be tolerable or tolerated for straights to speak, you know, negatively about homosexuality or mm-hmm. vehemently or militantly, it is mm-hmm. now quite acceptable for, albeit
of
a
course.
Small percentage of homosexuals, to be scathingly critical of heterosexuality. You know,
in fact, some of the homosexuals that were married right after the of the court's opinion spit at the those around them, you know, to say, "Ha, you know, we got ours." Spit at them.
Oh.
You had the guy that was the Asian and one of the two Asians in Star Trek. I forgot what his name was. He's homosexual. He's really outspoken as a homosexual, and he went off and called the author of the minority opinion a man and black man in clown face. You know, it's goodness gracious. And what he did is he wrote the opposing position, first of all, saying there is no dignity clause in the U.S. Constitution, and second of all, institutions can't bestow dignity. For example, you would have to dignify the Supreme Court, something that I don't think they deserve, because they're routinely showing no lack of self-restraint in their making rulings that have no support in the U.S. Constitution. I mean, the Constitution lists the federal mandates, the things that the federal government can do, and it says everything else belongs to the state and to the people. This is not a mandate of the federal government. It's like the health care, the approval, where Roberts literally changed the law so that he could pretend that it was constitutional. They have no self-restraint. I mean, that's the whole problem. They're not restrained by even the document that they're sworn to uphold. And, you know, to suggest that you can be dignified by your government requires you to dignify your government.
Right. Well, at first, dignity, it seems to me dignity is not so much, it really can't be something that is accorded to someone by someone else. It is something that is exuded by oneself, you know.
I think that is to a large degree true. I think that the greatest dignity that I have witnessed is the dignity that comes from being part of the covenant. You know, I've known you estranged from the covenant and part of the covenant, and there is a dignity to your persona and attitude that has grown as being part of the covenant. So I think that we gain a sense of dignity from Yahweh. Now, I would say that's the only source that we gain dignity. Otherwise, it is a it's something that has to come from within inside. You know, it's, for example, when somebody does something that you find is abhorrent, for example, throwing acid into little girls' faces and then pouring it all over their bodies. Representing a wannabe God. I think the dignified response is to stand up and vocally oppose it. And the undignified response would be to go off and try to hunt down and throw acid at in the face of the person who carried out the attack.
Oh, no. Well, see, I probably am not in, accord with you on some of these things.
Okay.
See, I would attempt to shoot him while he had the beaker in his hand just before he tried to. Once I became sure he was going to try to throw that acid.
If you were there at the time, that's if you could somehow turn the torture on the torturer as and away from the victim. Oh, I would agree. You'd do everything you could to protect the victim and to have the victimizer pay. After the fact.
After the fact, and then
the most effective thing you can, most dignified thing you can do after the fact is to expose the direct connection between Islam and this horrid behavior.
Right, because otherwise you're into vigilantism.
Correct.
you're taking the law into your own hands, you know. So
jihadi brides, being a married in Islam, and all it does is you've, the few rights that you had, which were next to none, as a non-married Islamic woman, many of whom have been mutilated by their mothers sexually, you now forfeit all of them because your husband, if you want to use that term, completely and totally controls you. He can do with you whatever he wants because you are now his property. Why would you celebrate that? Why would you want that?
I would hope that over time, eventually, I mean, there are some, you know, women who've departed from Islam and exposed these mm-hmm. things and speak out against them. Yeah. And I would hope that over time, you know, there would come a critical mass point where there would be sufficient, you know, mm-hmm. refugees from the movement who would, you know, start to speak out. You know, that in order to sway some opinion, because it seems to me that any of these young people who, I mean, let's face it, young people are, you know, naive, impressionable, some, you know, passionate, you know, sometimes ideological, you know, seeking, and they'll, you know, they'll do these sorts of things.
The ignorant and irrational are easily fooled.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is
exactly.
true. But the fact, you know, remains that in Islam, the religion prospered initially because of Muhammad's authorization for men to have total control over women, to rape those that were being conquered, to enslave their wives, to have total and complete control. And that was appealing to the kind of men that he was recruiting. And the Stockholm syndrome is why it prevailed all this time. The women who are victims of Islam become victimizers, and they actually come to embrace their victims. They're victimizers. Hey, you know, there was a tremendous advancement last week and a tremendous setback. Iceland's parliament has abolished its blasphemy laws, despite opposition from some of the country's churches. The bill was put forward by the minority Pirate Party, which campaigns for internet and data freedom. It came after the deadly attack, the bringing up of the bill came following the Charlie Hebdo attacks in Paris, but it was finally passed. The bill said it was essential in a free society that the public can express themselves without fear of punishment. Now, this is a country that you would go to jail for 3 months if you said something that was hurtful or hateful regarding a religion. But they repealed that. As three members of the Pirate Party stood up and each said, I am Charlie Hebdo, the vote was taken, and Iceland's parliament now has established the important message that freedom will not give in to bloody attacks. Now, this blasphemy law had been in place since 1940, and anyone found guilty would have been sentenced to a fine and 3 months in prison. Now, this kind of law exists in many countries. Canada is one of them. Israel is another. And the truth is not an alibi. The Iceland Monitor website said that the Church of Iceland actually supported the change. Good for them. And they quoted them as saying, any legislative powers limiting freedom of expression in this way is at variance with modern-day attitudes towards human rights. Well, they didn't understand why they should be opposed to it. The Catholic Church, however, of Iceland and the Pentecostal Church that speaks gibberish all the time, said that they were opposed to eliminating the blasphemy law. The Catholic Church wrote in comments submitted after the bill was proposed, should freedom of expression go so far as to mean that the identity of a person of faith can be freely insulted, then personal freedom as individuals or groups is undermined. How is personal freedom undermined if you say, you know, you've got to be a moron to be a Roman Catholic?
Right. Well,
that's not engendering the freedom. If you say, I can give you 1,000 reasons 100 of which are irrefutable and not even subject to debate, that prove beyond any doubt that Roman Catholicism is a complete fraud, that it has no connection to God of any kind. In fact, it's leading all of its constituents away from God and has from the very beginning. Now, back that up with evidence and reason. Why is that being undermined somebody's freedom? I'm actually providing them with information that liberates them.
Well, I would, okay, yeah. Number one, I prefer, like, I don't tend to call people morons for their beliefs because humans are so prone to error, you know, and to being persuaded by, I mean, you know, when you think of how many ideas we hold as true that we're wrong, just as we learn through our lives. So I don't like contemptuousness.
Yeah, I know. The English term moron is a pejorative, but the fact of the matter is it's a direct transliteration of the Greek moronos, which means to lack knowledge and to be devoid of reason. It's a term that Yosha has translated using many times. I like it for that reason. This is a statement from the article. The measure in Iceland repealed the law which made ridiculing or insulting the dogmas or worship of a lawfully existing religious community an offense punishable by fine or 3 months in jail. Ridiculing. Now, why would you not ridicule the stupidity, for example, of Mormonism? I mean, its basis, its Book of Mormon, is unbelievably stupid. You look at Islam. The Quran is the dumbest book ever written. How could you avoid ridiculing it? And why would you view it as insulting to say that Muhammad was as he was, a pedophile, a rapist, the like? Now, you were concerned about the word moron, which is a transliteration of the Greek word to convey ignorant and irrational. I used to use, I say, you know, you have to be ignorant or irrational or both to be a believing Christian, to be a believing Muslim. You either have to be ignorant or irrational. Now, a lot of people don't like being called ignorant, but it is lack of knowing that facilitates these kinds of horrid choices. Glenn, what would you say about ignorant and irrational?
Well, okay, so ignorant is about lack of knowledge or data or something.
Right, yeah, lack of knowing.
Improper logical process, you know.
Right, yeah.
I prefer to approach this stuff, but, you know, I think it's okay to refute, to condemn bad doctrines, even to even revile as immoral.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't find any benefit in impugning, calling people ignorant. It's like the word idiot comes from the Greek idios, which is, means self, which is, you know, a person's in their own little world. They're you know, self-centered, self-absorbed, ignorant of, you know, the truth of the world. So, but, I mean, I don't find it.
Use the term in Hosha 4:6, he says, my people are destroyed for ignorance. Yeah, ignorance, lack of knowledge, for not knowing.
Words take on different connotations when they're, you know, transposed into another language, you know, detransliterated or slightly altered and used. Like the word moron is in that case, may not, the word moron may not have been pejorative.
What it was is it was descriptive of ignorance and being irrational. Being ignorant and irrational when he was translated using it, he would have said lo yada. Lo yada is the negation of the Hebrew verb yada, and yada means to know. Lack of knowing.
I just don't find contemptuousness you know, helpful. You know, I don't think it's a fact. You talk about, okay, you make a lot of arguments from the standpoint of productivity, you know, things are counterproductive or use, you know, unproductive use. Okay, I just find contempt, you know, in, if you really care about someone and you wish to persuade them, you know, using pejoratives or demeaning or insulting, you know, is unproductive. You don't, I've never been persuaded. I've been persuaded that I was wrong about a great many things and continue to be. But, if someone's, you know, demeaning me or insulting me, you know, I might even, you know, striving to be logical, you know, come to say, okay, they're right about this or right about that, but I can't stand their attitude or he's an arrogant jerk.
Yeah.
You know, but then I don't have to do that if the person, you know, attempts to refute me on the basis of truth or morality or something like that.
Yeah, and it's because the term ignorant and irrational does not apply to you. You're not neither ignorant nor are you irrational.
Oh, I'm ignorant of a great many things, and I've been wrong.
But not of the things, not of the things that, for example, we would debate. And the reason that Yosha and Yanoa use the lo yada, which is ignorant, and the lo bien, irrational, so often. And they do it in a global way, is because the consequence of not knowing and being irrational is so horrendous. You know, there is an easy solution for being ignorant. Start observing. Start learning. Right, learning. And there's a, it is not so much an easy fix for being irrational today because we're no longer schooled in rhetoric and reason. We're no longer schooled in debate. So we have a culture that is easily misled by opinions and doctrines and indoctrination. But it's a worthy ambition to shed one's ignorance and to become rational. The benefits are enormous.